Everybody is. It's whatever time it is, but it's the top of the hour, as we say. All right, I'm going to mute Bianca and turn it over to you.
Thank you. So yes, welcome everybody to our webinar on the Scholarly Commons. I realize this is late at night for some people and right around dinner time for other people and really early in the morning for yet other people. So thank you all very much for making time in your day to attend this webinar. My name is Bianca Kramer from the steering committee from the Scholarly Commons Working Group. I'll introduce the other people who have played a role in organizing this webinar in a minute. But before that, I just want to go briefly over some practicalities. And the first one is that we have a Google Doc, a note document for notes on this webinar that has all the information on joining, the structure, but also very importantly, a place to leave your questions and comments. And you can do that now, and we can address them later or even afterwards. And it also has the link to this presentation. We plan to go around 90 minutes, including a lot of time for discussion. And so that's basically to expect. And I would like to ask everyone to mute when you're not speaking to sort of to limit all the background noise. And we also, to save bandwidth, sort of most of us also are not sharing our video. We can change that during discussion so we at least can see each other. But for now, that's probably best to save bandwidth. And this webinar will be recorded, so be aware of that. And it will also be shared afterwards, of course, to review and also for all the people who could not make it at this time, right here. So why are we doing this webinar? We've been working on the Scholarly Commons for about 2 years now, and we feel that we're at a crossroads. We think we know what the Scholarly Commons is, and we're now wondering what the best ways are to move forward. So today, what we would like to ask you is your opinion and suggestions on what is worth pursuing, and gauge your interest to contribute in any of the proposed activities. So what we'd like to do, how we'd like to structure this, is first give you an overview of what the Scholarly Commons is, what we feel it is, what has been done, where we are now. And then we'll ask all the four subgroups that have been working to illustrate a little bit more about their work, what they've been doing, and what their future plans are. Then we'll do a live poll to gauge your where you stand, where you feel. And then we'll have a common discussion. Can I ask again people who are not speaking to mute their mics because there's a little bit of background noise here. I promise to introduce the people who are, part of them are the people who will be speaking today, but also the people who have been working over the last while to make this a reality, to make this work a reality. People from the steering committee of the Scholarly Commons, people supporting us from Force 11, Stephanie Hackstrom and Lucia Wexler, and also hopefully you, because we really hope this will not be a one-way street, us talking to you, but really want to invite a discussion on where you feel this work is going. So having said that, having introduced us and the program, I'd like to give the word to Marianne to start introducing the actual work on the Scholarly Commons. So I'll stop sharing my screen, and Marianne, you can take over.
Okay, let me try. I hope everybody can hear me. And let me share Google Chrome. Introduction and present. So I'm hoping everybody can see the slide that says introduction. And thank you very much, Bianca. And again, if you haven't muted, please look at your icon and mute, because I think we're still hearing some background, and we're delighted that we have so many people here, but that makes it even more critical that you mute if you're not speaking. So as Bianca introduced the project, this is a project that is being run through Force 11. We were supported by a grant from the Leone and Harry Helmsley Foundation. And the name of the project was called Defining the Scholarly Commons. The idea here was to give us an opportunity to look across all the work that's gone around the world and all the declarations and what have you that people have been looking at, all the tools that have been produced, and try to see whether from this a coherent vision of what it is that we think we're trying to do to transform scholarly communications emerges, and then considering from a practical standpoint whether this provides a guiding framework for all the tools and platforms that have been developed to create something that is greater than the sum of its parts. So basically, it's looking at the governance around the production and dissemination of scholarly works in a network world. This is Force 11, and that's why it came into existence. And really, can these principles be used as a framework for organizing, communicating about, and guiding further development of tools and actions? So some of the antecedents of this, there were many, but one of the ones came from Force 2015, where Catherine Skinner gave a presentation, and she basically said that the current state in scholarly communications really can be characterized by something called chaotic innovation. Since Force 11 was founded, there has just been a blossoming, an explosion of new platforms, new things, new tools, new approaches that have been out there. And the question is are we in fact, as I mentioned already, creating something new? Are these jigsaw pieces that can be fit together, or is it still chaotic innovation? We're still exploring the space and we really don't know where this is leading. But we thought that it was really worthwhile trying. And again, we're very grateful to the Helmsley Foundation for giving us this opportunity. Another antecedent to this whole program was after 1 January, where I went to 3 different workshops on data citation. And I said, you know, it's wonderful that everybody is willing to fund these focused workshops. But I mentioned to Brooke Rosenzweig from Helmsley, nobody seems to be willing to fund us to consider this from a holistic perspective. That is, are we going anywhere? So the scholarly commons really is this idea of, are we building towards something? And if so, what is it? And maybe we've built it already and we don't know. And if not, do we know how to build it? It's very much aligned with what Force 11 was instantiated to do and many other groups around the world. We proceeded along these routes on several fronts. One of those is we actually went around, and this is Bianca and Jeroen's work, we went around and started to collect all of the declarations, manifestos, principles that groups around the world had been issuing, I'd say, over the last 10 to 15 years. And amazingly enough, there's well over 90 of these. And some of them are general, some of them are very specific, but clearly there's a hunger and inside the community for changing things. And we thought that it would be very worthwhile to have the opportunity to go and look across all these things and start to say, are they saying the same things? Are they saying different things? If we mash them together, can we create again something that is greater than the sum of its parts? So that was one way we did it. We also held some workshops, and back in 2015, Sarah Callahan, again at Force 2015, said, wouldn't it be nice if we could just start all over and stop trying to fight the current system and reform the current system, and rather just say, what is it that we would like to create now? So we held some visioning workshops, a lot of other groups around the world did too, where we basically took some premises. We said, what if our system of scholarship developed when we had the internet and primarily public funding of research? Would everything be the same? Would we act the same? What would our obligations be as scholars to society? What would be considered scholarship, and who would be considered scholars? So between these two activities, looking at the charters and also the visioning exercise, it was really quite clear as you started to look around that even though a lot of emphasis always has been on open, because without open access to everything, a lot of the dreams of what an alternative system of scholarship would be don't hold. But it's also quite clear that open is not the only aspiration, that there are other things that groups are asking for, that fair, of course, findable, accessible, and I put I as in big red, interoperable and reusable, because if these things that we're producing aren't fair, then again, we're not really taking advantage of the networked world. Open, of course, but citable, right? That we should be able to cite these. Provenance is absolutely critical. That versioned is clear, and that, again, the whole system is based on research objects, that is a multiplicity of scholarly outputs. So again, there's a lot of coherence here, a lot of consistency that really, the Commons, of course, is a common pool of resources, but that it is not just open, that it encompasses a lot of other dimensions as well. It was also quite clear that without a strong value statement, without a statement of why we are doing this, what our obligations are between us and society, that there really was no way to differentiate ourselves from the current system. That we believe that scholarship, that our obligations to society, that our scholarly practices and reward systems have to be consistent with the best scholarship possible. And to the extent that current incentive systems and what have you are not consistent with the best scholarship possible, then we have an obligation not to engage in those practices. It's also true, and during the course of the Scholarly Commons project, we kept going back and forth between people, culture, software tools, so on and so forth. But it is also clear that the Scholarly Commons exists only because of the technology. And I keep meaning to track back who said this at Force 2016, but I thought it was a very powerful statement. I think it was Juan Alperin, that our values should really be reflected in our software. That is, how we build our scholarly objects, how we build our platforms, have to reflect what we think that something called the Scholarly Commons should be. There's also a real hunger, and this white paper just came out, a preprint just came out a few days ago by Ernest Priego and colleagues. That use the term academic self-determination. And it really, you can see in all of these declarations and the movements around the world that there is a desire, right, that the scholars, those who engage in scholarship, should be the owners, the stakeholders of the systems that we use to disseminate and create these works. And so all of these different things come together in order to form the Scholarly Commons. So it's not just that the Scholarly Commons is a common pool of resources, research objects, and tools. Again, you see commons, the word commons being used all over the place. But without the practices, guiding principles, and the value system, there's no way to be able to judge reasonably that what you are doing is consistent with the principles of with the values of open scholarship and the Scholarly Commons. So together, we believe it is this package that defines the Scholarly Commons. So the principles of the commons turned out to be, of course, one of the major components, and I want to turn this over now to my colleague, Irene Volkman, who will start the next part of the presentation, finish the introduction, and introduce the principles. So go ahead, Irene.
Yes, thank you, Marianne. My name is Jeroen Bosman. I'm also in the steering committee, talking to you from the Netherlands right now. Yes, as Marianne said, I'll start the presentation. I hope everyone can see this. As Marianne said, the Scholarly Commons is much more than just a pool of resources. It's value-guided and principle-guided. So there are lots of values behind these principles. And this is what we have been discussing thoroughly in many different settings. Online and at workshops and conferences. And we have come up, bottom up, first with really a large number of principles. And at a certain point in time, we sort of distilled from that the core principles and organized them in various levels. So these three that you see right now are really the core principles. The first one is that research knowledge should be freely available to all wish to use it or reuse it. So that is about really about all the outputs being available for everyone without any limitation. The second is being able to participate. Participation in the production and use of knowledge should be open to all who wish to do so. And that's really, those two are very much core. But this is so basic that everyone would sort of agree to that. But what's very important that there should be no barriers and disincentives to prevent this. And this, of course, is still not reality. And this is why we need the Scholarly Commons. If you look at what are those rules that should prevent barriers and disincentives, there are three main ones. The first one is that for participation in the commons. There's not the the rewards is not in money or in citations or things like we are very much used to now, but the rewards are just access, opportunity, and attribution. Also, within the commons, we have stated that it is really agnostic to form and technology. It's not business models, or it's not technology or infrastructure that decides how the commons works and how it looks like. And a final one here is that external systems, of course, may exist, and the scholarly commons may interoperate with those external systems, but they should not harm the commons. And we will go into more detail into some of these principles later on in this webinar. If you want to read up in long form, in long text, on all these principles and how it and the scholarly commons came to be, there is a preprint available on the OSF preprint server, and it's really very insightful to look at all the details described in that preprint. Also, of course, we do have many other points of information. So we have the preprint, and we do have the scholarlycommons.org website, where you find all the principles and links to all the details about that. And if you haven't done so, and if you are on Twitter, please follow us at scholarlycommons, and that's without the A, so it's scholarlycommons. So we do have the basic idea of what the scholarly commons is, but of course it's still just mainly an idea. There are lots of bits out there, and we do know where we want to go, but we don't really know yet exactly how we will get there. And that's why we have organized the activities behind and around the scholarly commons into three major parts. One part is on inclusivity, one part is on the principles themselves, and test driving them and discussing them, and one part is on the practice. So how can we guide researchers in their daily practice and looking at what kind of technology is supporting those practices? And these are also the four subgroups of people that are taking the scholarly commons further and trying to promote it and further work on it. And this is where we continue. I think I'll hand over now to Bastian to tell a little bit about what's happening in the first subgroup. Bastian. Yes.
Hey there. And let me see that I can...
You've gone underwater.
Okay. Then let me do the screen sharing on my end. And... Yes, I hope you can now see us.
We're getting some very bad feedback.
Yes, I noticed as well. I think it's okay now. Okay, so yes, my name is Bastian. I'm speaking to you right now from my apartment in Berkeley in the USA, so it's early morning here. And I wanted to talk a bit about what we were working on in like the inclusivity subgroup of our whole group. And the idea of the inclusivity subgroup basically came up during our workshops. So we had two workshops with a larger scholarly commons work group, one in Madrid and then a second one later on in San Diego. And at the end of both workshops, basically, there was like comments at the workshop and afterwards online that we were doing like a maybe suboptimal job yet in thinking about who's actually at the table and talking about the scholarly commons. So when we were meeting in Madrid afterwards, Lorraine Chun, who is based in Canada, was writing this article like on Medium about how we need more meaningful diversity in the scholarly commons, despite our workshop being already targeted at making sure that our diversity is somehow represented amongst the participants by getting people from all kinds of different scholarly disciplines, geographic locations, and even career stages in the room, that we were still kind of not doing the perfect job there. And at the next workshop then in San Diego, we actually had like an unconference session about the whole issue of scholarly communication and diversity and inclusion. And out of this unconference session, basically, we discussed that it would be a good idea for us as the scholarly commons work group to have like a subgroup that includes or is targeted at exactly these issues. And this led to this year then the first community call that we held in the inclusion and diversity subgroup that was held in Spanish earlier this year. And it also led to our next workshop centered around the issue of diversity and inclusion in Santiago. Unfortunately, somehow we have not done a really good job of practicing what we preach when it comes to scholarly communication and having like a very good record of what actually was discussed at the meeting in Santiago. And as I personally was not attending, I have really no clue what happened there. So that's basically the status right now. So we have to pick up basically again and make sure that the work group or the subgroup keeps going forward. And that's where we are right now. And I think with this, I can already hand it back to Jerome, who will talk about the principles.
Or actually, you can hand it back to me, Bianca.
Sorry.
That's no problem. Yeah. Also from the Netherlands, so not that far away. I'll share my screen again. And but actually, before I can you hear me? Before starting to talk about the principles, maybe taking it back a little bit about the inclusivity, and maybe also Bastian, ask you to come back on, because we also wanted to give an opportunity for questions after each of the subgroups, so not to save them all to the end. So if there are any comments or questions right now on that inclusivity piece, then that now might be a good idea to address them briefly. So if anyone from the audience has something to say or ask about that, mm-hmm. is your chance.
This is Marianne. I just wanted to also say, because I meant to say this in my introduction, the process of going through this over the last couple of years within the working groups and the meetings has been very wide ranging, and as we've kind of tried to explore this question from a bunch of different angles. And some of these topics have been quite contentious, and people have dropped out or been coming to the project at various times. And it has been our intent here, even in this presentation and elsewhere, not to present this as a package that is wrapped up in a bow, because it's not, right? It's difficult, it was an ambitious project, and therefore, we have tried to address the different angles, even as sometimes we don't really have an answer to it. The good thing about these different exercises is, at least in my own work and my own interactions with my colleagues, they have been very useful in informing how new communities who have decided to come up and address these issues. It has provided the language issues and things that I can communicate with them. And I think the issue of inclusivity has been, as you might imagine, one of the most contentious. And so, again, this is some place where we really feel that FORCE and other organizations do really have to confront, but it's hard, right? It's a hard project. So we also want to welcome anybody who was at the Santiago workshop who might be on here to weigh in and perhaps give us a sense of what went on there, or again, other work inside the working group.
So is there anyone who wants to weigh in? And
okay, I think continue.
My name is Rusty. I'm from the Center for Open Science. I guess I'm interested in what were the major issues in creating inclusivity? What are the things that people pushed back on the hardest when trying to get some consensus around the approach?
That is a very good question. And I think, again, if you look at the titles of these two things, people's perspectives on these were very, very different. And the question of where one holds workshops was a big one, that we, you know, that the funding for this and the impetus came out of North America and Europe, and the workshops were held there, which of course limits participation from people around the world. And I think that was a big piece. The pushback, though, again, the contention was, can one workshop with 40 people represent 6 billion people, right? I mean, it's always a balance. One also saw that the ability to travel to these types of workshops was very much dependent on your career stage, right? And where you were. So senior people who are at, you know, in North America and Europe tend to have a lot of freedom. They can travel on a moment's notice. So in order to really get people from around the world, if you've ever traveled to a country where you need a visa, can take months, right, in order to get those visas. So if you have 4 months to put on a workshop and you say, here's where it's going to be, you already cut out a lot of people because they simply can't travel. So, you know, all of these issues turn out to be real significant issues. Where we often fought was whether, you know, whether one should continue even if you can't solve these, because it's still worthwhile getting people in the room. And I won't say again that the perspectives expressed by everybody were the same. They certainly were not.
And one of the other things that were raised was also with the makeup of the starting of this and the makeup of the steering committee, because as Marianne said, most of our participants, even though we try to include people from different areas, geographical areas, cultures, we ended up with a majority of participants from North America and Western Europe. Same in the steering committee. The majority, or frankly all of us, are North America, Western Europe. So that as a starting point is biased from the start. So that was also one of the very rightful criticisms, I think.
Yes. And, you know, some of the other, again, everybody joined this, and you can see this in here. Everybody who's probably on this webinar are here for a different reason. Some people want practical tools that they can use. Other people are considering this from a sociological or economic perspective, right? This is a broad issue. But, you know, clearly those of us from Western Europe and North America are doing this because our own system needs to be reformed, and we know that. But of course, to presume that the things that drive us and the declarations that are made, we saw this at the last force meeting, are applicable or relevant to people in other parts of the world, that these are the problems that they're trying to solve, you know, it may not be. And that's why I think it was very worthwhile that we tried as much as possible to bring in these broad perspectives, but it's just a beginning. It's not, you know, it's not an ending by any means. And I don't think anybody who's trying to sort of figure this out would claim that this is an easy problem. But so again, some people got angry enough that they said, no, I'm sorry, I'm going to throw my hands up and give up. But some people are like, no, that's not the answer either, right? We have to keep trying. We have to keep communicating. We have to keep trying to see how we can you know, broaden out the idea of what a scholarly commons really is.
Bianca? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm Ricardo. I was in the 411 in FISC activity.
Yes. Hi.
Yeah. I guess we got this kind of discussion, but also how the 411 webpage was only in English. We also referenced who is the board of 411 following in Twitter, and also only people from the north side. So if all these details, this is what they are talking about. It's completely different. How to become involved the people in the south side is complex, because you talk about that. It's not only bringing people from the south side, it's about how you commit in the work and the differences in South America, for example, in Chile, in my case.
So I think Dan O'Donnell and others, I think, are exploring this question in the future commons, so that this work is continuing. And we hope, again, that we can start to address these issues in a more substantive way, right? I think the conversations have just started, and now they need to continue.
Yeah, and thanks, Ricardo, because I was muted just now, but thanks, because those are excellent points, and they really illustrate the work we should do, and just that we just need to work harder on this. I think we can discuss this further in the general discussion, but this might also be a good point to make the transition to the principles, because one of the first things about the principles, that was also one of the criticisms in San Diego, that is still puzzling me, and I would still like feedback on that and talk to that more now and later on, that maybe there was some talk about, yeah, maybe the principles are fine, but this whole idea of how they were brought about and how we talk about this and how we structure the whole work, like we just addressed, that's the problem. But there was also talk like, maybe these principles, because they come out of the structure, might not be representative of the situation of people in other parts of the world. So that's really something that, for me, is really an open question. These principles, as we have them now, are they really, do people really feel that they are that they are valid, that they are applicable to their situation? So that's my bridge to discussing the principles. And again, like Marianne said, the principles were developed bottom-up. We had our Madrid workshop. We really had wide-ranging discussions. And from there came a list of principles that really illustrated things that people felt were important to address. But that in itself, that whole list of principles, and we went into San Diego with 18 of them, that list in itself is not a coherent set. And that's the subsequent work that was done, that Dan O'Donnell took a really big part in, and he really pushed us to look at that in this way, to really see if we can fit all these principles into a larger framework. And that resulted in these that overall structure that Jeroen already showed, where we say that research and knowledge should be freely available to all who wish to use and reuse it, and research should be open to all who wish to participate in the production and use of knowledge. And for that, there should be no systemic barriers and disincentives. And of course, it's exactly that third part that is where the details are, because what does that mean? And what we came up with, and basically what those things that the people in Madrid came up with, all those points that they boiled down to, was that reward should be access, opportunity, and attribution. That the commons should be agnostic regarding form and technology, and that the use of external systems and technologies should not harm the commons. It can still be there, but it should not harm the commons. It should not harm that things are openly available, that anyone can participate and use them. So that's the overall structure. Still getting some background noise. I do hope it's not me, and if anyone's not muted, it would be really nice to mute yourself. Thank you. Great. So overall framework of the principles. But this is, of course, still very abstract. And what's needed to make this more applicable? And for that, I would like to look at one level lower and go back to these individual principles that were formulated and that all fall under these under this larger framework. And when you look at the structure of the commons, like we envision it, with that being on one hand a common pool of resources, but also the practices and the guiding principles that guide how those resources are dealt with, and all the people involved, the stakeholders, the researchers, but also the publishers and the funders, really the people who are doing this work. The principles really address all three of these levels. At the level of the common pool of resources, there are things like the commons is open by default, even by design if possible. Not just by accident, but that's really the starting point. Meaning that content in the commons should be open, but also fair, findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable by humans and machines. It also means that these resources, the provenance of the objects in the commons, should be transparent and persistent. And it also means that all activities and outputs that take place in the commons remain in the commons. It's really essential of the idea of commons, that it cannot be taken out and then made unavailable. You can use them, you can modify them, you can build on them, but they should remain available in the commons. So these are all principles that address the characteristics of objects in the commons. If we look at the layer around that, the practices that deal with using, producing those resources, then the principles that address that are, first of all, that the commons really accepts all objects that adhere to its guidelines, regardless of form, genre, or approaches. So it's not just articles. There's no preference of an article over a monograph, over a blog post, over an RDF triple. Really, all objects are accepted in the commons. And the form these objects takes, they should also be determined by the needs of the research itself, not by custom that articles are required. If that's not the right way for the research, that the research then itself does not benefit from that way of dissemination, then other ways of dissemination should be equally acceptable. It also means, and this proves to be a really point of discussion often, that the commons has no intrinsic hierarchies, rankings, or reward systems. That's not to say that those don't exist, or that they should not exist, but they are not part of the commons. In the commons, things are equal. If you want to use the things in the commons to make a ranking of that, as long as the things are still available in the commons, that's, we can come back to that later, but that's the idea. That it can be done, but it's not part of the commons itself. And the fourth one, dealing with practices, is that the commons exist independently of technology, funding, and business models that support and enable it. And again, that doesn't say that these technologies are not there. Of course, these technologies exist, and these technologies also drive what's possible, but there should not be a limiting factor. Again, things should not be done just that because that's the way that technology dictates, or because that's the way a current business model dictates. If that's not the best approach for scholarship, then that should be able to be questioned. And that's meant by this last principle about the practices. But this again, what it means for the research objects in the commons, what it means for the practices of how we deal with those research objects, how we produce and use them. And then there's a fourth set that deals with the people in the commons. The people are very much part of the commons. And there we say that the commons welcomes all people, irrespective of background, irrespective of anything. That's the inclusivity part. As long as people accept the principles of the commons. And on the right-hand side, it also sets the expectation that to make the commons work, to make scholarly communication work, it needs global commitment and participation in this, and it also needs to be developed by its members. Remember what we just said about technology and about business models. It's really the people interacting in the commons that determine how these things should be run. So principles on the level of the resources, principles on the level of the practices, the research practices, and principles on the level of the stakeholders. All trying to boiling down to or trying to achieve those three main things that research objects should be open, fair, and citable, and participation in the commons should be open to all who wish to participate, to all who wish to use or produce research objects. So that's an overview of the principles. And what do we hope to, how do we hope to take this further? How do we hope these principles can be useful? What we've already said is that we really want to hold these against different communities, hear from different communities, if these make sense for their community. If this is applicable for people in their daily work. And if not, why not? Where are these tensions? So that's the first thing we want to know about these principles. Because if they are to be useful, they are to be applicable to people. The second way, and I do apologize about this title, I knew there was something that I still had to do about these slides, is looking at really research practices. Can these principles help you in guiding your research practices? Are these examples of practices that are commons compliant? Can you think of practices that are perhaps not commons compliant? Can you look at the way you do things and hold them against the principles and say, okay, this is really not compliant with the commons, so I cannot or don't want to do it this way. And you formulate ways of doing this that are compliant with principles. So can the principles really guide your practices? And the third way is looking at the tools and platforms that you use in those practices. Can you use the principles as a touchstone for these tools and platforms? And we already addressed that earlier. There are many developments going on. We have many existing tools and platforms. So one of the things that the principles might be good for, and that's really something we'd like to work further on, is see, is the commons already out there? Can we identify tools and platforms that together would make a research workflow that is commons compliant? Do we have in our existing infrastructure, our existing systems, do we have something that approaches a commons compliant workflow or minimal viable prototype? That's one approach. A very different question is that an ideal situation? Or can we think of using technology, possible technology, to make something that's even better? And that's what Chris will talk about, part of what Chris will talk about in his presentation. So, but one of the things we also want to look at is the common, the current existing system. So these are all things that the principles, we hope the principles can be put to use. So giving direction to a community, and for that also very much checking whether these are really applicable to a community. These are not set in stone, and we're really open to criticism and to critical questions about these principles. We also want to know if these principles can help in showing what people could pledge to in the way they work, and that's researchers, but that could also be publishers or funders. And we want to explore whether the principles can guide the development and using the use of policies and technology. So in a nutshell, that's a little bit more about the principles and placing them into the context of how they developed and how we want to see if we can use them in practice.
So thank you, Bianca. We can take a few questions if you want while maybe Fiona loads up.
Okay. I'm going to pass me the...
I think Bianca...
Yeah, I stopped sharing.
Okay.
Yeah. So while Fiona loads up, anyone has... does this raise really urgent questions or just any questions from anyone? I can hardly imagine it would. I'd be very surprised if it doesn't.
This is Rusty again. I just can't help myself. I'm interested in how the principles of complete equality really impact your ideas of discoverability of all this research. So as it gets contributed in these large quantities and is somewhat, it's distributed across potentially many, many platforms, what are your thoughts on discoverability and the ability to find what you're looking for to build on over the long haul?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that for me personally, but other people might think differently, and please do weigh in also from the steering committee.
I am. Yes.
Yeah. I think personally that's a challenge, and that's also something that if you think of the commons as this that basic pool of resources, then it has the opportunity for different services to build on that. And also then for those services to make a decision on what to filter and what to make discoverable.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's also a good question. Part of it is sort of self-referential in that it says FAIR, and part of the FAIR principle is that you need to index yourself in whatever relevant index there is. And one of the outstanding questions of the commons has been, is there an index of the commons? And obviously there needs to be, or there should be, or again, the objects themselves present inside of them the capacity to be indexed by an independent thing. So you basically declare yourself as part of the commons and therefore you're indexed. So we've already seen the development and beginning of apps that will look for open access content, right? Because currently right now, when you search any of the indexes that we use, Google Scholar, PubMed, you know, coming from biomedicine, you get a mixture of closed and open content, and it's very difficult to figure out which parts are open or not. And I know OSF and others are starting to take on this question. So I do believe that this idea that there that when things get moved into the commons, they become open, fair, and citable, and that therefore one ought to be able to find things that are in the commons. And again, these are the types of questions we're hoping to provoke today in discussions. You know, the boundaries of the commons, when things are, can you be partial in, partially out, how does that work? But I think this issue of, I should be able to at any point find the subset of things that currently are out there that comprise the commons.
Hello, can I make a comment? I'm calling from Houston.
Absolutely, go right ahead.
Yeah, so this is the very first time I've ever listened to anything on FORCE. I get your emails, so I'm, you know, very, very novice here. So you're talking very, very abstractly. I'm a user of data, I produce data. And your description to me just seemed like the web, okay? When you're talking about this commons, that's what I do now. If I want to find information, I go on, that's what I do. So I know that it's you know, I know that it has something else, but to me, you mentioned the word chaotic innovation. It seems to me like what you're saying here is you can put anything in this sink and, you know, and there's no filtering, there's nothing, and it just seemed a bit chaotic. That was just my comment.
And that is absolutely a fair comment. And again, there has been, so this whole system, we wouldn't, as we often say, we wouldn't be even talking about this if there weren't something called the web. But as I just indicated, right now, if I wanted to search for the totality of open data sets, open software, open articles, open content, blogs, I can't, right? I can distribute it through the web, but the web also doesn't have any guarantees of permanence, resolving identifiers, right? If you start to look deeply into the issues of FAIR, and we'll get a little bit into this in decision trees, there are commitments that you need to make if you're going to make something available according to the principles of the commons. We probably don't have time to get into it in this presentation, but when Fiona shows the matrix of the commons, there is something there called a publisher. And if you are publishing objects for the commons, you have these obligations. You have the obligations to make sure they're fair. If they're fair, you have a persistent identifier, right? You have indexed it. So there's a lot that is wrapped up in open, fair, and citable that starts to address the issues that you're talking about. We have had gigantic arguments over what this means that everybody can participate, and, you know, are there methods to scholarship that need to be adhered to? And many of us would say yes, some people say no. So again, we're inviting you into a conversation here because these issues are very, very difficult. All we're starting to ask is, if there was this alternative that was based on open, fair, and citable, A, how would we know, right? can we access it? Rusty indicated, right now you can't. But those things are out there. So what would be needed to sort of bring this thing into, you know, into focus and into actual practice is a fair question. So again, we've said in the beginning, we don't necessarily have answers for this. This is not something that is being presented. This is meant to provoke discussion and consideration of whether there is such a thing called the scholarly common. So I guess, Fiona, other questions or?
Well, you mentioned the idea of a publisher, which I found very interesting. Mm-hmm. They've made a lot, I mean, their living is based on the idea of curation and mm-hmm. of helping you decide what's important and what's not based on either an editorial point of view or, right. Or a level of quality point of view or even a financial point of view. They've helped organize information into buckets that can be consumed and understood.
Exactly.
What they've taken in exchange for that is your ability to decide when and how you get to it and at what price. I think one of the goals of this is to open that idea up to the community as a manager and arbiter of that truth and not something that's a little more financially oriented. It still implies, though, that there's going to have to be some sort of organizational principle so that you can find things. I like the idea of a standard or of a tag or of a of a, I don't use the word badge, but a way to say this is Commons compliant. And if you choose to participate, you could guarantee that's going to have certain characteristics that you'll find helpful to you. If you don't choose to participate, then your stuff's not in there. That's fine. But the development of a standard around of openness and Commons compliance, I think, is very compelling as an alternative to the what we've all run into over the years, which is walls, paywalls, and et cetera.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, the first point of the idea of a publisher is we often conflate publishing platforms with journals and editorial policy. Those are two separate things. So we have basically come back and said a publisher is somebody who makes this thing public, right? And they do exactly what you've said. So it's not that there are no standards going into the commons. There certainly are. And those traditionally have been done by those who are publishers. So people ask me, well, can't I just put something up on the web? I said, you can if you can ensure that it's fair. Right? That it's open, that it's citable. And if you can't do that, then you are not a publisher for the commons, right? Because persistence and accessibility is a social contract. There's nothing intrinsic about the web. It provides a mechanism, but it does not guarantee that. And that's an important characteristic of scholarship, is the stability of these links. The stability of these links is what allows the scholarly web, if you will, to exist. Without those, you end up with 404 errors. And as we also said, this citability, this provenance is also baked into it. And 404 errors, broken links, break that. So there is, if you start to think through these things, you start to see that some of the answers to these questions come out in open, fair, and citable, which is why in this next section, that's what we focused on, even though, again, other people said these are not the most important things. There's other things that are more important. But I think, you know, my exploration of the commons, this is very personal to me, is that the community already has produced some of these answers, but we have not yet articulated them. And that's what we're hoping that this program helps us do. So, all right. Other questions, comments? These are excellent questions. Maybe Fiona, you want to go through the practical?
So, from the theory to the practice. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, everybody. So I'm Fiona Murphy, and I'm half of the co-chair group of the Decision Trees subgroup within Scholarly Commons. And I'm talking from Chichester, the UK, where it's just coming up for 6 p.m. As people are already getting a sense, we did a lot of work, I think, in the various workshops and then subsequently to that, thinking about how values might be expressed in terms of principles if you're trying to conduct work and exist and put things out in a scholarly compliant way. But in fact, at the San Diego workshop, I wanted to shout out Danny Kingsley, who I think is a very integral part of that initial conversation. A group of us started thinking about what does that actually mean in practical terms, for people who are in the lab or in the library or whatever, who may want, if you like, to contribute or participate, but who exist in the real world. And so, as a result, we decided to think, if you like, about what are the things that you're working with if you're trying to build content and resources in the commons. You're trying to make things, people, entities, actions, all as open, fair, and citable as possible. So if you take that as your sort of baseline for objectives, then what does that start to mean in practical terms? So we started to work through some real life research dilemmas. I actually got, probably Danny will recognize these, some of the original scribbled decision trees. We started thinking about that again. If you have a data set, What are your options, and how do you go about practicing an open, fair, citable research workflow, and what are the best outcomes that you can come out with? So basically that was what we did in the Decision Trees group. We looked to what our knowledge bases were, what information and tools we had in terms of platforms, software, sets of principles that were already out there. And we tried to work in a commons compliant fashion as we were trying to work out what that was, to provide, you know, to, in the end, have open, fair, citable outputs, which would be in the form of decision trees, questionnaires, and interviews that would then potentially be usable by real-life scholars in their practice and enable them to themselves be as open, fair, and citable as possible. So in so doing, we tested, I think one of our base principles, and I think has already been mentioned, is we didn't want to invent anything new if we didn't need to. So we tried a number of different software packages in particular to compile the trees. But we found in the end that there wasn't anything that was out there that allowed for the versioning, that was open source, which we felt was important, or which was potentially affordable, or which was otherwise going to work or be compatible with the other things we felt were important to add with it. So we ended up actually commissioning our own software. And our list of outputs is here. And I think it's very important as well in this presentation to give you a lot of URLs so that when you go back and have a look at the slides later, you can pick things up and have a look yourselves later. So the three main outputs there were the matrix of the commons, and I'll show you a view of that in a second anyway, which basically lists all the entities, the actions, and the persistent identifier systems, the principles, and you know the other pieces that we felt together made up the commons. There's the software, which we've lodged in the Force 11 server. It's also on GitHub, which was also, you know, we very much want to make open and available and usable by others, you know, with particular focus on the Force 11 community as being potentially interested themselves, but, you know, seriously for anybody else who wants to use it. And what we called the Handbook of the Commons, which was basically our ongoing annotated account, or it was our wisdom from the field, if you like, of insights and warnings that we felt were kind of arising as a result of our trying to do this, to actually manage this. I did as well want to give a shout out to Michael Bar-Sinai of Harvard and Ben Gurion Israel, who was actually worked with us on the software, his policy model software, and he worked really hard and really well, and taught us a lot. So, as I mentioned, this is what the matrix of the commons currently looks like on the Scholarly Commons website. It's not very pretty, so that's one of the things that we're certainly open to, is anybody who feels that they could, a burning desire to make it more beautiful. As you can see, we've got the organisational framework. We've got a series of columns, open, fair and citable, with a few crosses in between, but identifiers, and then the governing principles and documents. So basically anything that's underlined is clickable through. We've got the objects, those are the ones which we've got definitions for, and the crosses, those are the ones we have decision trees for so far. And then we've got the links to the principles as well. So you can see this is actually just a click from the top of the list. I mean, it goes on, it's probably a quarter of it, if that. So there is, you know, we listed a lot of things, and we still found that I think that it's probably not complete. So to give you a more vision-friendly idea of how it was all working and what we were actually doing. So working from the left, we were generally taking an entity or an object or an action. We were defining it, applying a scholarly commons principle, which would be open, it would be fair, citable, and then using the community principles that we already had available to us, together with our own practical understanding and consulting others where possible, we started building the decision trees themselves. And again, if you have a look at the slides, those links at the end, they are actually links, and they will take you through to what the decision trees actually provide. And I can actually, yeah. So this is what we were looking to produce then. So the decision trees themselves are open source, and so they can absolutely be used, reusable, and they can be cited, they can be set in stone, they can be anything you like. But we started off with very generic states of questions, such as a fair data recommendation, for instance, is like, can my data, which is not digital, be made more commons compliant? But we also really hope that these might ultimately be picked up by specific groups, potentially by an institution that's wanting to encourage its researchers to come to its repository, by specific disciplines, potentially who deal with sensitive data, or who are working on particular projects, who are wanting to coordinate, and but basically support people so that they just minimise the friction that at the moment is very much, I think, in the way of people being able to actually manage this sort of workflow, and certainly which we ourselves experienced. This is currently what the decision trees actually look like. You see on the left, there's the sort of like the printout, the output of the figure, and then on the right is the questionnaire view, or the interview view that you could also see. I think what we like about the latter is, as you can see, we can actually put additional information about what kind of data you might have, links to other bits of the tree, or to other trees, or to other sites indeed. I think we're feeling at the moment there's still quite a lot of work that needs to be done to these. The bar to entry is still quite high in terms of not particularly pretty. They're certainly quite difficult for us as without programming backgrounds to build and test and use. And I think as well, it's difficult to see. We need to have some kind of high view locator so that you can see whereabouts in the process you are, and also where you might be trying to get to. So basically some more navigation. So the Handbook of the Commons, those of you who might have heard of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and isn't this whole sort of oeuvre actually resonated with me a lot. I think it felt as though we were increasingly the only sane people in a mad, mad world. I think as what we were doing just felt so obvious, but it was so difficult that it was a very big challenge actually to articulate and to actually get across. And I think that the handbook is a good first pass at that. At the moment it's very short, and what you see on this page is pretty much a distillation of what we've got. I think ultimately I would like us to be able to get and work through this in more detail and actually have a think about the values that were mentioned earlier, what a tool builder version of the handbook might look like, and what a funder version might look like, so that in a sense there are these guidebooks that people can pick up or just have a sense of, which will help with making that chaos of innovation, the jigsaw slide that you saw in the beginning of this presentation, just make that a bit more coherent, so that while a multiplicity of tools and options I think is very good, that there's a more interoperability and there's more ease of movement from one platform or tool to another. So another analogy, or another sort of image that kept popping into our heads was that of cars and driving. The top left image is a car from the early 20th century, and the idea is that when people first started driving using cars, in effect you had to be your own mechanic. It wasn't going to be so much about I need a car to get me from London to Coventry. It's very much a case of I'm going to go on this adventurous trip with a car that may or may not get me there. And if it doesn't, I'm going to have to stop and think about what's wrong and work it out myself. I think that although that's where we feel we are at the moment in many ways, I think what we ultimately need is for researchers to be able to just get into a car, see it as a, or get into a research flow, see it as a means to an end, and then actually think more about the domain knowledge and less about the under the hood stuff, if you like. The image on the top right is a specifically British phenomenon, where we had the Red Flag Act for a few years in the late 19th century, which actually seriously was a law where if you had a car, you had to have somebody with a red flag walking in front of you in case of danger, basically to warn people. And not surprisingly, that just completely stopped innovation in the British car industry until it was got rid of. It was a case, if you like, of so much burden, so much, so basically negating the whole point of even doing what you're wanting to do, that people didn't want cars, they just wanted faster horses, as you can see in the background. The image at the bottom, again, it's what we felt about what happens when people do get a good idea, but they only, if you like, get halfway through it. They only, that things get part built. I think that happens, you know, a lot of the time when people have a good idea, they'll build a tool and then it'll get put on a website and it won't get updated. And ultimately all the good it's done, you know, it becomes lost. And so we really want to think about, well, actually it's really important to build the whole car each time, make something that's useful and then pass it on. So think about persistence and permanence and again about things being adaptable to the future. So thinking about the key takeaways for I think what we found was, I think it's really important, and I really ask people to think about how they could participate, and help push this forward and you know, define it and make it yours. I think in a way that is the only sensible way to go forward, really. I think what we really thought we needed was more agility to actually take some of the existing platforms and systems and then repurpose them. We felt that the decision trees themselves quite often exposed gaps in knowledge and practice, and the workflow that we were trying to build also threw out insights into how current platforms which are trying to work together, which are trying to make things meaningful, reduce friction, how there are still some points where, or a number of points where these need to be addressed, where perhaps a bit of co-design and communication could make a really big difference in terms of the pipeline. If things get too difficult, people aren't going to do it. What we really need is people to find this easy. Like it's the obvious way to do things, as opposed to the you know, kooky, idealistic, utopian vision, if you like. I think that we also need to think about the longer term, about investment and about how to sort of build this into the business as usual model for the future. So there's our contact details, the URL again, and again, finally, another shout out to the Helmsley Trust for their support to us to date. Thank you. So I need to get to.
So I don't think we, Chris, you didn't have any slides. So did you just want to say a few words on what you've been doing in your group?
Well, I do have slides. I just haven't added them to the.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
Thing yet, but.
So then share the screen.
Are there any questions, though?
Well, go ahead and get yours shared. And while you're doing that, we'll take questions because we're running low on time here and we still have the poll. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Hi, is now a good time for questions?
Yes, absolutely.
Wonderful. Hey, I'm Elisa Arbuckle from the University of Victoria. There's a little bit of construction on my building, so apologies for the noise there. I'm really fascinated by the scholarly commons that you are building, by the software you're discussing, and I'm wondering if you could just speak a little bit to how you see this in relation to other large scholarly commons projects. I'm thinking in particular right now of the newly announced Scholarly Hub and, of course, the Modern Language Association's Humanities these comments. Thanks so much.
So again, we are not building. Okay, we are not building the scholarly commons. We are exploring whether the commons has already been built and is there something that we can say is a scholarly commons? And the idea that this would be a central platform that was built is entirely antithetical, right, to anything that we think here. The whole reason of saying that the scholarly commons is not a technology, it is technology enabled, is that the idea and the principles of this need to transcend any given implementation or any given technology that's in use today, right? That this says this is a system of scholarship that should persist regardless of the fact that today's technology is X and tomorrow's is Y. So that every community that is coming together to be able to build something that works for them is part of the commons if they themselves are commons compliant. And a lot of commons are closed to members. And so again, these are the types of questions that one wants to pursue. You may be part of a commons, but is that itself part of the scholarly commons? Do you create open, fair, and citable content? So that's the type of question this is meant to provoke. And we also wanted to make sure that as new communities came on board, so Fiona mentioned the spinal cord injury commons, this is a project that I'm involved in. We did not drive that. It was groups of researchers who got together and say, hey, we want to be able to do this. And we were able to share, right, the expertise that the worldwide community has assembled with them to help them as they were making decisions about what it is they wanted to do and not wanted to do. So for example, even something very simple about what licenses you should pick. There's a lot of really good practical advice and also really good work about why you want to do it this way versus that way, because one of them leads to more fairness and one of them leads to less fairness. So the idea of the matrix of the commons is to say, if you're thinking about data citation, here's a set of principles that govern data citation. So when you build your commons for what you want for your community, perhaps you could implement some of these ideas. The Handbook of the Commons, I think, is also meant to really help with that, because we know that there are some things that if you do, you will increase the openness, fairness, and citability of what you do. And that's really what our desire is. So in my view, and this is, again, a discussion that's been brought up, is it one commons or a bunch of different commons? And I think that's why in the principles it says this is developed through the practice of these different communities and different members.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. That's really, really helpful for me to get a better grasp of what Force 11's role is in this larger ecosystem. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Perhaps if I might add just one thing to that, you mentioned some of the examples of other organizations that are working in a sort of commonsy way or identify themselves as a commons. And we are indeed planning and we want to get into contact with many of these organizations and platforms, whether they are more technology oriented or more community oriented or just a platform for sharing objects. We want to get in contact and see whether they align and whether our visions of how to work in a scholarly commons way overlaps or not, whether they are divergent.
Wonderful, thanks.
Okay, and Alyssa, I may have a few things that will relate to your question as well as I go through this, because one of the things we've realized too, while we don't think that the scholarly commons is one platform, that it would be useful to cooperate, to collaborate across different commonses rather than not. So trying to explore how to do that best in a way that gives people the ability to practice and use their agency in the way that they would like to is one of the purposes for Work Group 4. And if it's okay, I'll go ahead with that.
Please, Chris, and remember it's 10:14.
Okay, I will be quick. Okay. So the main things I wanted to talk about was kind of the positioning of Work Group 4, what we're trying to do, and then where we want to go and how you can get involved. But So there's a question, and we've talked about it as well already. Do we have all the pieces we need for the scholarly commons? And work group three talked about using decision trees to work within the constraints of our current system, our current tools. Work group four is kind of taking the approach, what if we could build something for the scholarly commons? What would that look like? What if there is some way to make this process easier? And we think that technology is part of this. The cultural and technical are one. They're highly related, and they're really projections of a culture. So a lot of the tools and technologies out there are expressions or extensions of the culture that we see all around us, and having a right vision of what that culture is integral, I think, in understanding what the scholarly commons is. So it'd be nice if we had a time machine and we could just go 10 years into the future and see how this worked, but we don't. So we have to approach this in kind of, there's some hard work to be done to really understand what it is that we're exploring here. And we essentially, what the scholarly commons is at least to me, is we have this 300-year-old system for scholarly communications, but we have new needs in society, and we need to create something that fits those needs. If you looked at the current needs of society as kind of this abstract shape, we need the scholarly commons to come in and fit that. So that's kind of a lot of the mentality around our approach in work group four to this problem. So we need something that can take the current system where scientific publications are where the value is, and distribute that and make it more of a space where people can get involved in lots of different ways and create a truly shared science. How we're approaching that in work group four is, work group four is essentially a scholarly commenting laboratory where we're iterating between things to help us understand what this context is that we need to be building for, and also experimenting with ways to build for that. So it's, again, we're not building a thing, but we're exploring lots of different possibilities and really what types of things are needed. And this is best done little by little, because right now we have a lot of preconceptions and things that we're struggling with as we move from the old system to a new system. And as we explore these little tiny bits of these elements of culture and how tools interoperate or interact with that and technologies, that helps us to remove our blinders and to see things in new ways. And some of the things that we're doing right now specifically is we're working on a list of scenarios about what we think, how things would work in the scholarly commons. And these are evolving. They're not meant to be prescriptive, but just to get our thoughts out and get some concrete things for discussion. We're also trying to keep track of questions that come up during the course of the research, and creating ways to keep track of our work and answering them. And we're putting together a pool of topics and projects, people that are already working in trying to create the future, and bring them onto our weekly calls to discuss different things with them. Let's see. And so a big part of what we're doing as well is, as part of the designing process, is to experiment with lots of different approaches. So if people are working on something, we can try it and use it in our group and see and try to learn more about what they're trying to accomplish and how that affects the culture. And as far as the end goal, we're still working on that, and we hope that it will continue to be a discussion point. We really don't know at this point where this exploratory process will take us. Those are just some ideas that people have mentioned, and here's some ways to be involved. So I hope that was quick enough. Are there any questions?
Yes, thanks, Chris. While you're taking questions, Jeroen, I think you're up next, right? So why don't you stop sharing, Chris, and
okay.
And then make sure you post those slides?
Yes, I will.
Okay. So, Jeroen, and again, if there's questions.
Yes. Thanks, Marianne.
Yeah.
Regarding time, what we have prepared is a poll, the same one that we did in a conference in Berlin just a month ago. But we do have, for some people, we might only have 9 minutes left. Mm-hmm. So what I would like to suggest, and please, Bianca, tell me if this is a good idea, is to just ask everybody to go to this poll, but you can also do that right after the webinar, and we will share results in the Google Doc. But perhaps it's better to use our last 9 or 10 minutes to address any questions or any remarks that people might have, because there are also some questions in the Google Doc that we could discuss right now.
So sounds absolutely fine to me.
Yeah, so please, you can go to this URL for the Commons Poll webinar right now, but you can also do it afterwards. And just to save time, I would like to suggest to hand over to Ian to lead the discussion and questions.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. If I just get the screen share.
Yeah, I'll give it.
Book.
There it is.
Super. I've got to find, there we go, share screen. And on the Scholarly Commons. And is that coming through? What can you see?
Yeah. Where do we go from here?
Awesome.
Right. And that is the big question, and I hope everybody will have a chance to actually answer the poll.
So just as a lead into this, if I can find the view present, hopefully you can see that filling the screen now. These are just some questions that came up where we thought now, one of the things, is there more to be done? And the current steering group certainly thinks so. But I think also it's kind of interesting to hear some reactions from people who I believe are sort of new to the conversation and the discussions we've been having as we've been coming through. But it'd be interesting to hear from anyone who's been listening to this and thinks, well, I'm not quite sure I get it. Also interested to hear people think it's, you know, really a great thing and why they think it's a great thing. In terms of, Marianne mentioned that this was initially sort of like driven by funding that we got to push this forward, and there's been a steering committee pushing this forward, and it's been a small group of us, and we've been thinking about, well, where do we go now that that funding's run out? And our belief is that the way to try and make progress towards realize something around this is through the subgroups, and you've heard about what the various subgroups that are in place now, but you know, maybe people have other ideas for particular areas we should be focusing on in order to make progress. It's probably worth reflecting on what the broader picture might be. For me, it's about understanding what the scholarly commons means in practice, but it's also about trying to understand what it would involved, will be involved in driving adoption of this. There's no point talking about these principles if they're not going to have a real kind of impact on the way we do research and communicate it today. And it was touched on as well, and I'll just skip forward a slide, all the various other initiatives and activities here. These are just an excerpt of some of the ones which we mentioned in the preprint that Bianca talked to. There's links there to all the various activities and initiatives that Bianca and Jerome have assembled over time. So yeah, that was my kind of introduction to the sort of discussion. Are there comments people have that they'd like to share and haven't had a chance to share already?
May I comment?
Of course.
I'm Dominique Babini from Buenos Aires. I attended the Force 11 in Portland last year, and I joined this group, and it has been a learning experience at that moment and today. Thank you very much for the presentations. In Portland, I decided the way I could participate is to push and this forward in Latin America, where we work. I'm in Flexo, a network of research institutions. So we facilitated a working group on a particular issue, which is open access managed as a commons, because in Latin America it is managed by the scholarly community, but we face strong lobby from commercial publishers who want to convince us that the APC is the best way forward. So we are very concentrated on that. And thank you very much for all the ideas, and inclusivity in scholarly commons is very important. And I wonder if you could see if in other regions they could do what we are doing in Latin America. We took the idea of the working group. We say, well, we can contribute from Latin America. We are not ready to contribute because you are building, you are developing and discussing all the conceptual framework, which is very important. And then we, in some time, we will be able to participate more actively and contribute in your working groups, in subgroups. Very important, the subgroup on inclusivity and the one on accepting all objects, because accepting all objects, digital objects, and welcoming participants, not only from scholarly background, will help very much in open science in our regions, in developing regions, mainly thinking of agriculture, of health, of social issues, etc. I will share the material. If this presentation is available in the website of the working group, I will share it with the regional working group, who has a very few, 4 or 5 members from other regions, but we have the same problem as you have, but the other way around. We have our virtual meetings in Spanish, and we have our discussions in Spanish. And it's too expensive to translate everything to English. So I would like to share with our group in Latin America this presentation, if it's possible. And I tell you that we have a conference in Claxo next year in November. In last conference in Medellin, Colombia, 2 years ago, we issued a declaration of open access managed as a commons, which I will send to Bianca and Marianne. To add to the declarations, and we have conference in November. It will be an opportunity to build a panel, joining force, working group, and our work group on commons in Latin America, and maybe preparing something together. We have the problem language because Claxo's conference are massive, but we can. You have members who are Spanish-speaking. You have Ricardo also. So I don't know him, but I wrote his name now. So that's my comment. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that. And it reminds me of one of the things we discussed at the very early stages, which we never really got to follow through, but this idea of when we were going through the sort of workshops and exercises we were doing of could we package these up so people could take them away and have localized conversations, whether those be regional or even domain specific and stuff like that. And that may be an idea we want to revisit. And it would be great to capture more about your experiences of cultivating those discussions that might be able to be picked up by somebody else. Are there other comments?
Doesn't look like it. No. I mean, there was a lot of good discussion in the chat, and these are exactly the types of questions that we have got throughout that I think are really necessary to provoke thought about whether there is something called the scholarly commons, that is all the work that we're doing right now going to fix our current system, or are we really defining a set of practices and principles that define something that is an alternative, if you will? And the types of questions that people were asking are the things that allow us to sort of explore and question this. So I hope that people will stay engaged in this idea. We'll look at the result of the poll and post that, because I think, again, where this thing goes really depends on the FORCE community and whether they think that having some high-level unifying framework for the efforts that we do will help things or not. I mean, that's really why I'm doing it. I hope you see that we tried to span the high level with the low level so that there's something for everybody. But I really thank everybody for their interest in staying on so long. And Bianca or Jeroen, want to close?
Thank you, Mary. And I do have one final remark before Bianca probably will close the webinar. And that is that we do have some contacts and some people volunteering already to do part of the translations of the Scholarly Commons website. So that is in the pipeline for a number of languages. And we'll come back to that and let you know as soon as it's ready.
Yeah, and just to build on that, I've seen indeed in the chat and in comments a desire from some people who want to get involved and want to explore how to get involved. Please let us know. There are lots of contact details here. And then I think the next step for us is to really consider how we could follow up on that most effectively. So we will follow up on that.
Exactly. I just wanted to make one more thing too, is that Dominique, I think you participate in the working group by very virtue of what it is that you're doing. I mean, again, I think the more these things are explored in these different contexts, I think the more data we get, right, the more we explore these ideas and put them into practice. And I think that those are so important. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah. And then hopefully to really close off, like we already said, the slides will be made. They are online as Google Slides. Once we have all the slides, also the ones from Chris, we'll also make them really open, fair, and citable. And we'll share the materials, including the whole recording of the webinar, also to the FORCE 11 website and the other ways, like the Scholarly Commons website. So that will all be preserved. And thanks, everyone.
Will be available as well.
Yeah. Great, yes. Thanks, everyone, for your participation, for staying on, and for your enthusiasm. And I'm really looking forward to the future of the Scholarly Commons.
Me too.
Me too.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Ciao. Bye, ciao. Arrivederci.
Esso.
Ciao. Ciao a tutti.